I'm going to start out with a quote from the textbook. Holmes says, "To suppose that the creative intelligence of the universe would create man in bondage and leave him bound would be to dishonor the creative power which we call God. To suppose that God could make man as an individual without leaving him to discover himself would be to suppose an impossibility. Individuality must be spontaneous. It can never be automatic. The seed of freedom must be planted in the innermost being of man. But, like the prodigal son, man must make the great discovery for himself. The divine plan is one of freedom, and bondage is not God-ordained. Freedom is the birthright of every living soul. All instinctively feel this. The truth points to freedom under law. Thus, the inherent nature of man is forever seeking to express itself in terms of freedom. We do well to listen to this inner voice, for it tells us of a life wonderful in its scope, of a love far beyond our fondest dreams, and of a freedom which the soul craves." I thought that was awesome. There's so many, if you take the concordance for the Science of Mind textbook and you look at the word freedom or free, it takes up the better part of a page. So it's one of the most frequently used words in the Science of Mind textbook. So, so Holmes has a lot to say about freedom. 5 years ago, I gave a talk on freedom in this same group in the room across the hall. And it occurred at a time in my life when I wasn't feeling particularly free. I had just bought my house in Silver Spring, and as Ed can tell you, there's a million things that have to be done on top of everything else in my life going on at the time, and I felt like my life was just an endless to-do list, and I was also in a relationship at the time, and the day before I gave the talk, the guy moved out. He announced he was moving out. So Kate came over and got my head on straight so I could give the talk, and I was great with it. And it's a good thing because as practitioners, when we give a talk, we focus on the subject, and freedom was up for me, and I wasn't feeling free. So the things that were in my life that were making me feel unfree needed to change and to take new shape. And so I was looking at my old notes for the talk. I'm not giving the same talk that I gave 5 years ago. And I noticed that one of the things I was doing was I get on the subway in the morning to go to work, and I'd take a look at all the people and the faces in the car, and I'd wonder if everybody felt as trapped as I did. And I can't even imagine thinking that anymore. Mostly I get on the train and they're friendly people and we talk to each other, and it's a good experience. So as I look back on it and look at the talk that I gave at the time, it's no wonder that so much change had to occur. And also 2 days before I gave that talk, my favorite uncle died. And he'd been in the army. He was a man who embodied freedom to me. He didn't marry until he was well into his 40s. And he grew up in Switzerland and came over to this country during the Second World War. He went to Yale and then became a dentist, and it was during the Korean War, so he joined the army and went overseas. And he stayed in the army his whole career as a dentist. His last assignment was in Germany, which he protested. He really didn't want to have to move overseas because he was settled, he was enjoying life, he was married, he was happy, and so he fought the change with everything he had, including his congressman. But nonetheless, he ended up moving to Germany, and so he turned that to his advantage, and he reclaimed his Swiss citizenship. So he was a dual citizen, and he and his wife traveled all over Europe. It was a wonderful experience for them. And then, once he retired from the army, he worked in the German economy for a while as an orthodontist, and had a wonderful time living there as an American in Germany and visiting family over, just over the border in Switzerland. He decided to move back to this country and settled in northern Florida. And he was an avid environmentalist. And he worked did a lot of volunteer work for the Audubon Society. And he was also the founding member of a group, I think it's Republicans for the Environment. And he said, the ultimate conservative conserves the environment. So I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. I was Googling him this morning, and I came up with all this stuff. And one of the things I found online was a patent for precious metal facings, because there were a lot of Latino men who wanted their teeth refaced in gold. No, gold. Yes, and then he would do things like every day he and his wife went out on the beach and they counted the turtles, and they fought against the trucks that used to ride the beaches because they would disturb the turtle nests. And he'd go out, they'd, you know, sponsor the bird counts and things like that. And I mean, he made his life his own. He traded options to earn some money in addition to his retirement. And then at some point he was overcome by what was to be a fatal lung disease. And he had this oxygen tank that he'd haul down to the beach, and he'd still walk around looking for the turtle nest. So even to the end, he lived life on his own terms. And every time I think about him, I think how inspiring he was, because he took all these difficult situations in his life, and he just he made it work for them, and he was happy. So this time, 5 years later, he's been gone for 5 years. I'm not finding any sudden changes in my life based on my thought about freedom. I mostly, at this point in time, I can enjoy my freedom. My life has changed quite a bit in the past 5 years, and I'm doing a lot of things that it wouldn't have occurred to me to be doing. And so it's just been, if I hadn't moved to Silver Spring, I wouldn't have a lot of those opportunities. So life feels good right now, and I do feel like this talk has given me an opportunity to look at my life and realize how good it is to feel that freedom. Holmes says that freedom means to eliminate from our consciousness everything that binds and limits the free flowing of divine spirit through us. And at the same time, it is to exercise the faculty of personal choice, and keeping personal choice immersed in the divine flow of spirit through things like meditation and prayer brings us the power that Jesus used, and the works that he did become possible to us. And we can claim our freedom when we're convinced that we can use no mind except the creative mind of God, and we seek to create no limitation for ourselves, so we live lives without boundaries. Emmett Fox also says that freedom's achieved by releasing any thoughts of restraint, limitation, and bondage. And it's a result of regulating our lives according to principle, not according to the outer appearances or what others think and say we should be doing. So I started thinking a lot as the spring went on and I knew I'd be preparing for this talk. I thought about the Arab Spring that started actually on December 17th in Tunisia with a gentleman named Mohammed. I'll just call him Mohammed. I don't want to in any way discredit him by mispronouncing his last name. He was 26 years old, and he set himself on fire in front of a local municipal office that refused to talk to him. According to Al Jazeera, earlier that day, the Tunisian police had confiscated his cart because he didn't have a permit, and they beat him. And he went to the municipal office to file a complaint, and of course the government employee said, "We don't have time for you." Apparently, the officials had little concern for the rights of citizens, like this young man, and there was nothing unusual about the daily humiliation that he would go through. He was, as a young man, his father had died, and his stepfather was ill, so he was the sole support of his family. And even still, he would give away fruit and vegetables to those that were poorer than he was. And he was an amazing person. He was well-loved, and You know, there was something about him, I guess, that his story that inspired a lot of people. He ended up dying of his burns on early January, and by then an uprising had spread across Tunisia and later across the Middle East. And in the case of this young man, I guess what had happened, he must have said, "I've had enough. I'm not going to deal with this anymore." And so that's when he decided he'd file his protest and stand his ground. And his desire for freedom was, I mean, he left an enormous legacy because of that desire. And, you know, you think about the long-term impact. We aren't done seeing the results of the Arab Spring yet. But I guess those of us who have been involved in New Thought for a while immediately think that within us there's a seed of freedom within each one of us that desires to be expressed and to live that way. And I guess most of us, when they hear the story of the young man, they applaud him and they feel some kind of connection with him. It's unfortunate that he died. But before he died, the Tunisian president came and apologized to him for what he had been through. Recently, I went to visit a close relative in a psychiatric hospital, and every day, you know, when you're in a hospital like that, your days are highly regimented. So I get there, and I'm only allowed to see her for an hour, and I had to be on the list of acceptable visitors, and they let me in, and we had lunch together. They told us when we were done eating. We went back and sat in her, there's like a little sitting room for groups. And then we were told it was smoke break. So she and I went outside just so we could be out of doors. And as I was leaving, I said, you know, it just feels like so stifling here. How can you stand it? And she said, well, this is exactly what I need right now to start feeling better. And I think she's right, because what for me would feel stifling for her is actually liberating. So it's a matter of, you know,
feel safe. Having been to a mental hospital, you feel safer there. It's not, it's like the opposite of freedom. It's like you just want a cave to go into.
Okay. So obviously her perspective is different from mine, and my point being that for all of us, what feels free to me doesn't feel free necessarily to another person. For example, for you, Ed, having a home with a certain amount of acreage might feel like a prison. But for you, it's probably liberating. It's like a dream come true. And so when you look at what's going on in your life at any given moment, when you see yourself using the word should, I think it's a sign that you need to step back and go, whoa, is this really serving me at this point in time? And to me, the word should brings up feelings of constriction. If I should do something, it usually means I'm not doing it because I want to, because I'm doing it freely. I'm doing it because I need to kick myself to get going to do it. So, for instance, an example might be saying I should go into work today, or I'm excited about going to work today, or I'm looking forward to it. You know, it gives us, there's a difference in the energy. Like when you talk about your job, you fix things. You deal with people that are very unhappy because something in their lives is broken. And usually it's something that inhibits their freedom. For instance, dishwasher or refrigerator.
Convenience of some sort.
Yeah, convenience. And you go there and you make their lives different. You fix their lives. You're like the minister. You go in, you fix it, and I'm sure you calm them down, and you probably give them lots of advice, and you could look at that as I'm sure from time to time it must feel a little tiresome, but overall, if you look at it, you might conceive of the career that you've chosen as being one that's freedom-giving for a lot of people. Plus, I'm sure it provides an abundant income. So I guess you can look at things like your jobs, maybe relationships. Another big should is visiting family members in the holidays if you don't feel like it. That's always a big deal. If you read the advice columns, that comes up a lot around the holidays. Sometimes being married to the same person for many years and having the same routines can feel like it's very, very restrictive. And living by others' expectations is another way of feeling totally unfree. But there, you know, just by shifting our thoughts, by looking at all our situations and thinking, well, does it fit me now? Does it not fit me? I think we can come to a greater feeling of peace and freedom in our lives. So I'm gonna close with a few questions. Where do you stand on all of these issues? Relationships, your home, your job, your career, your feeling of leisure time in your life. Are there any circumstances that you feel may be restrictive? Are you living in another person's dream for your life, or are you living your own dream? Freedom is yours to embrace, and it's only a thought away.